You're listening to Thrive, conversations from the fertile edges with me, Pollyanna Darling. The edge is where different ecosystems meet. It's the place where the tended meets the untended, where field meets forest. Edges are diverse, abundant with life, and a little unruly. In this first series of conversations, to celebrate the launch of my new book, Bedridden to Buff, you'll hear stories and wisdom of people who have direct experience of living through, with, and beyond pain, sharing the information and ideas that open portals to new possibilities. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Ellen Davidson, not least of which because her story of overcoming includes trees. I met Ellen virtually some years ago via the global charity Tree Sisters. Ellen lives in the redwoods of Northern California. After she gave birth to her first daughter in 1987, she lost her ability to sleep and her muscles spasmed into the pain of fibromyalgia. 5 years later, she'd crawled her way back into fragile well-being when she gave birth to her second daughter and then spiraled even deeper into illness. Although she'd tried everything from hypnotherapy to homeopathy, it was when she began spending time alone in the ancient redwoods that her healing journey took off. She shares some of her experiences with this in her recent book, Forest Bathing in Ancient Redwoods: The Wisdom of Nature from Trees, Dreams, and Telepathy. Ellen firmly believes that being in nature, whether a desert, river, garden, or mountain, can improve our well-being. Welcome, Ellen.
Thank you, Pollyanna.
So I almost can't wait to get to the part with the trees, but before we go there, I'd love you to share with us how you ended up with fibromyalgia.
I'd always slept well as a child, and then my first daughter was colicky, and I didn't have any local family support, and my husband and we had moved. I didn't know anyone, so I didn't have any friends. And then she was up screaming and wouldn't let me sleep. So then I totally forgot how to sleep. My body just quit. I couldn't fall asleep during a nap. Sometimes I'd hallucinate her screaming when she wasn't. And I think I just felt really inadequate and unprepared to be a mom. I wanted to do it perfectly, which of course turned out to be impossible. And but there was so much trying and efforting in that. And I think even when she became a good sleeper and a lovely little girl, I was still in that hypervigilant, high stress state. I mean, I think some of it is that a lot of us are raising kids without a village and without a lot of support for children. And so I was capable of taking care of myself in the world and seeming like a pretty functional person. It was when that additional stress of being responsible for this young life and knowing that when I was losing it, it was not good for her, that just was too much stress for my body to bear. And so, of course, not sleeping, then your body doesn't get rid of lactic acid, your muscles become tight. There were years when I couldn't turn my neck.
Wow.
So it was pretty hard to drive when you can only go like about that far. I was trying so hard to show up and be there for my daughter. Mostly I did manage to. I had some meltdowns here and there, but mostly I was pretty good, actually, considering that I felt fairly wretched. And it wasn't just fibromyalgia is a weird thing.
And so fibromyalgia, I mean, I don't know a great deal about it, but it's painful, right?
Uh-huh. It's a lot like Lyme's in the symptoms. So, yes. Yeah. At one point, I had a doctor offer me opioids because the pain was bad enough. I'm glad I said no to that, because I got so desperate with the sleep thing that I did try tranquilizers, and they were the only thing that worked. So I took the smallest dose. My doctor guaranteed that I'd be able to go off easily. I didn't take them every night. And then my youngest daughter ruptured her appendix ruptured, and she was in the hospital for 10 days. And I was really scared. So I took them every night for that period of time for a couple weeks. And then I was addicted, and it was really, the trees helped me get off that addiction.
And so can you just share a little for anybody else that doesn't know about fibromyalgia, what it's like to, what is that experience like? What does a day look like?
You don't have a normal amount of energy. So the demands of life seem insurmountable and overwhelming sometimes. And I had to really pare it down so that I could show up and do what I needed to do for my children, or at first my one child. And what went a lot was my social life. I just didn't have the extra energy to do all those fun things, the mommy and me play groups and story hour at the library. And so I did what the kids really needed, but a lot of things. And it's kind of fibromyalgia. It's a little bit like living in a straitjacket. Your muscles all over your body, there's all these tense muscles, and they don't relax. So they stay that way. You wake up that way. At least that was my experience of it. And I don't have it anymore, which is such a blessing.
Yeah. So how was it that you came to begin healing? Like, what prompted the journey of healing?
When my youngest daughter got her driver's license and I didn't have to drive people six places a day, then I had a certain amount of liberation. We definitely needed more money. I was supposed to get a job. But at the same time, I had been meditating with a Tibetan Buddhist Vajrayana Lama, and he had given us the suggestion that we follow the juice. And that meant do the things that gave us the most vital life force energy that we wanted to do. And it was such a revolutionary concept to me, because our education is all about delayed gratification for most of us. It's never about what do you really want. Well, at preschool and kindergarten, maybe. But after that, it's not about doing what you want to do. And to have permission, and at that point, I'd given some of my power away, so the big llama gave me permission, felt really important. So to have permission to do what I want put me in a different state. I'd wake up, and I had a little freedom and free time that I had never had before. At the same time as he'd given this suggestion, and I'd wake up in the morning and I'd go, what do I actually want to do today? Not every day. I didn't have that much freedom. But several days a week, I'd wake up and I'd say, what do I really want to do today? And it kept being go to the forest day after day, year after year. Now it's 16 years of that.
So I'm curious what the first, had you been going into the trees before the llama gave you that permission? Did you already have a kind of feeling for them?
Well, I grew up by the beach in Southern California, so I had loved playing in the ocean. And when I was a child, my dad took us backpacking all the time in the Sierra Nevada mountains. And back then, nobody went backpacking. We wouldn't see anybody back there. We could drink the water right out of our little cups. And that was magical for me. So I always had a real deep love of nature. When we moved here to this rural kind of remote part of California, I wasn't that into the forest at first. It was dark, and I was always seeking sun and light, and I like to be on top of mountains or at a beach. So it took a while for me to develop a taste. What actually happened was there's a big old growth redwood in my backyard, and that tree came into my dreams for years and was teaching me in the dreams. And back then, I didn't believe in any of that. To me, that was like, I had taken dream work in college at University of Santa Cruz. So I did this Jungian thing.
You could learn dream work in college?
Yeah.
That's cool.
In California, you could. It was wonderful. But so I had taken this great class. It was called Birth of a Poet. And we read Man and His Symbols and all some pretty serious books. So I took the tree as part of me and analyzed it. It was beyond my comprehension that the tree was a sentient being that could actually communicate with me on any level. But now I think that's what happened, even though that still pushes the edges of what we know. So I had that relationship going in my dreams at night more than actually spending tons of time in the forest.
And when you started going into the redwood forest, what was it about being there that made you want to keep going back? What was it that was giving you that vital energy?
Well, at the point when I started, so the Lama gave me the suggestion and I thought, what do I want to do? And it was go to the forest. That was when I was trying to break the addiction to tranquilizers. It was right then, at that moment. So I felt pretty wretched. My skin was crawling and my brain was doing weird things and I couldn't sleep at all because I had a rebound from the tranquilizers that made everything so much worse. But I did. I went to the forest and I couldn't get anyone to go with me. So one of the things I was dealing with was fear, because we have bears and we have mountain lions. I've run into six now. And it was just a little scary. But sometimes people go with me, but I wanted to go too often. And so nobody was there. And I was walking on these trails. There are more people out there now since the pandemic, but back then, nobody would be anywhere. What I felt was refuge, because there's a sense of deep peace and there's a radiant field in an intact forest that hasn't been harmed for millions of years. There's a sense of a conscious, alive presence. It felt like balm to my whole nervous system, as if I was just being so deeply soothed. So then I wanted to go back as soon as possible. So as soon as the next day that I could get away would come, off I would go. And I started to, I would hike, but I would also sit. And I started to get to know different trees, and that my experiences would be different with each tree, the way they are with each person you meet. You'll connect slightly differently with different people because they bring out different facets of us, right? So yeah. That surprised me too.
And was there a particular tree that you started with?
Well, the one in my backyard called me and I ignored it. So that was like 31 years ago. And the tree adventure started 16 years ago, where I started actually going and sitting with the trees. And yes, there was this tree we call Summer Tree, because you have to cross a fairly large, it's called a creek, but in the winter it's a river. You have to cross, and it's too hard to cross in the winter, so I couldn't get there. The first time I was there, I was with my friend, and we just sat under this beautiful tree to have lunch. We were just hiking and chatting. And then she was a big meditator, more so than I was. She's the person who got me into the Buddha Sangha, where we would meditate with the Lama. And my friend Annette suggested that we meditate with the tree. And I was like, sure. And during that meditation, I literally heard like this creaky voice that wasn't me in my head say, come back. So I came out of that and I said, did you hear that? Was somebody here? Did you say that? You know, where did that come? And could not puzzle it out. And so I thought, well, I have to go back. And so the next time I went back, I couldn't get anyone to go. So I was all by myself and I was really scared. I'm going to get eaten by a lion. The bear is sure to get me now, you know, or what if there's a weird guy? So I was in my, like, I was pretty hyper alert, but I got back to the tree, which was about 4 miles in. And I sat down with the tree and fell in love, and have had an ongoing love affair with that tree ever since. I found other trees because I can't make it to that tree in the winter. So, you know, bit by bit, and they're not all the same, and whether or not they, it's always peaceful to be in the presence of a tree. But whether or not I'm going to have anything more unusual than that, who knows?
If you're tired of feeling trapped by chronic pain, get inspired and reclaim your life with Bedridden to Buff. In this little book, I share my remarkable yet gentle transformation from being bedridden in 2017 to winning medals in a national paddleball competition. This uplifting story includes powerful alternative healing methods and pain management techniques, plus insights to help you change your relationship with pain. It gives you the tools you need to move beyond chronic pain and into a life of vitality and gratitude. Find Bedridden to Buff on your favorite ebook or audiobook platform. And now back to our fertile conversation. For someone who's never been in a redwood forest, like me, for example, or who doesn't even know what that is, can you describe it for us, what it's like to be in there, what the trees are like, what the feeling is?
So imagine you walk in to an enchanted realm. There's giant sword ferns all plumped up from the winter rain, waist high. The birds are here now because it's spring, so winter wrens are singing and varied thrush. And it sounds like with the plash of the sparkling water from the small creeks, it sounds like chamber music, just this really sweetness. There's white three-petaled trilliums lining the trail, and they're poking their heads up with such purity, such just this pure beauty, and beauty lures us deeper into the forest. And then there's this hush that is so unique to redwood forests. Because the trees are so tall and it's so shady and deep and dark and secret and yin, there's a palpable, imagine you just being embraced in ancient sentience and wisdom and a knowing. And I always sense, I often feel, and this could be my imagination, I'm admittedly very imaginative, but I often feel as if the forest is aware of me and all the little creatures, and we're all part of this tapestry of life. And it's exquisite. Frogs, big red tree frogs boing across the trail and get your attention. There's ravens and crows, and they're raucous, and there's Steller's jays, and sometimes I'll see a bald eagle or a golden eagle circling way up above. There's lots of turkey vultures with their serrated wings, large wingspans serrated at the end. Deer go by often. And then there's the elk. Don't get me started on the elk.
What is it about the elk? Tell me. Now I need to know about the elk.
They're huge. They're like 1,200 pounds. And the bucks have these ginormous antlers. And in the rutting season, which is August, September, they're really going at it. The big bucks guard the herd. And sometimes I've been coming back from a hike and they're in between me and my car. One time my friend and I had to turn around and go all the way back 8 miles, and it was dusk because that elk wasn't going to let us by. It bugled, it herded us, it looked like it was going to charge us. And
wow.
If an elk charges you, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
They're huge. You're not the winner on that one. So, but they're really peaceful if it's not rutting season. You can walk right by them.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that was the most beautiful description. When you said being wrapped in this ancient sentience, I had goosebumps everywhere. I could really feel that. So the way that you think about your healing journey and the role of the forest in that, how did that all unfold for you?
Well, there's so many, healing is like untying the Gordian knot, right? We find the thread we can unravel, and that leads to other threads, and because so much of it's interconnected. And I want to really emphasize, I think any wild place has the capacity to offer us this multidimensional healing. And so just as you, Pollyanna, the birds and the beautiful water that you're gliding over gave you so, and it's so motivational. Beauty. In my book, I write about beauty as a goddess, but she lures us out of ourselves, out of our little concerns and our worries and our trying to make the future be this or that, which was a lot of my stress. And because beauty is so beautiful that we want to pay attention, so we get here. And so a lot of the healing was just how beautiful it is and was. And each day's different. The palette of nature never paints the same picture, which was partly why I was just so eager to go again and again and again. I'm sure that's true for you with the water, the light and the birds. Nothing's ever quite the same. So that was a lot of it.
Yeah, that's so true. I haven't really thought, I mean, I am in love with the river that I paddle on, and I have loved that river for a long, long time. And I love her because she's so changeable. Sometimes the water is this incredible teal color that looks like gel, and all you want to do is get in it. And then sometimes the water is brown and muddy and stinks, and you just don't want to be anywhere near it. And it's like the river has these moods. And yes, the beauty is something that keeps me coming back over and over, but I'd never actually thought about the beauty being part of the healing. It's so interesting to think about it that way.
Well, for you, being there and moving your body and doing that despite discomfort was a big part of your healing. But I'm sure part of why you wanted to be there was the river and the birds and you know, I mean, otherwise you could just go to a gym and do an exercise machine. And,
yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, it is that. It's the feeling of being part of everything, I think, is what I get from being on the water on a paddleboard. I can see the stingrays. I can see the stingrays dart away and the puff of sand that comes up. And on a paddleboard, you can paddle right up next to all the seabirds that are on the sandbanks, where on a boat, they all fly away. On a paddleboard, you can go right past them. And yeah, there's something. Maybe it's like what you describe with the redwoods, where it's so minimalist being on the water with a paddleboard. I feel so stripped back that I can be part of that whole scene of water and the islands and the sky, sometimes the moon. And it is very relaxing. But what I guess what I notice is that to be in that peacefulness, I have to have dropped my mind, you know. I have to be in a peaceful place.
Okay, I'll tell my process there. So I have to drive a little ways because all the redwoods around me, there's an occasional old growth like the one in my backyard, but everything around me for half an hour either direction has been logged. So it's all second, third, fourth growth, which is still really beautiful. And I have to say, I admire how valiant nature is to try and heal over and over again this abuse. But it's not the same as a place that's never been harmed. There's an intactness that helps me resonate with the part of me that's whole. So that was a big part of my healing, was just feeling what wholeness feels like, even if it's just a remnant forest. I mean, we don't have what used to be on the planet.
I think that's a wonderful point that you just made, that those intact places touch into your own wholeness, your innate intactness.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's where the health is. I mean, our bodies are always trying to find health and homeostasis. So when we're ill, that illness to me, I looked at it as was showing me where the imbalances were. And I had a lot of imbalances around self-worth and self-esteem that really hit hard when I was trying to be a mom, because I just didn't feel like I could do it well enough, you know? And the belonging that we have in nature is really interesting, because I could just be. No one was watching me. I didn't have to perform and pretend to be better than I was, or present wound first and bond with everybody about how messed up I was. I was good at that. You know? So I could just be and let whatever was there come up. And sometimes I'd sit at a tree and I'd just be crying. But while I was crying, muscles were softening and relaxing. Things that I'd held for a long time. A lot of times I sang a lot, partly to keep the mountain lions away. But also, I was told as a kid, like so many of us, that I couldn't sing. But it turns out I loved to sing. And the birds liked me singing. They'd sing along. The frogs would croak along. Nobody was telling me that I couldn't do it. And so I'd make up the silliest songs. But there's so much healing in just letting our voices out. So there were all these ways that being around people all the time was constricting me, especially because I had a terminal case of toxic people pleasing. And I mean, my parents' generation did their best, but they had gone through the Depression, World War II, and then they all had babies. There wasn't birth control. They weren't quite ready for the deal, I don't think. And they really wanted some time to kick up their heels and play, which is understandable. But it set me up to try and get everybody to like me all the time. And that's exhausting. That's a reason to get fibromyalgia right
there. That's so exhausting. Exhausted. Yeah, so exhausting. Because you're never putting your own needs at the center of your life.
I didn't even know what they were. I mean, I was so lost in the mirrors of everybody else's perception and trying to read the situation and read the reactions and little nuances and give the part of me that matched whatever I thought they wanted. And it was exhausting. But so there's no doing that when you're alone in nature. And you could be like on your paddleboard. You're not maybe alone if you're with other people paddleboarding, but it's still you and the board out there. You can't talk. You're not doing the other people, you know, quite the same way. So when I do go with people, we usually spend a good part of the time hiking in silence. And so I was going to tell my process. So on the drive, I let myself be as neurotic as I want. I get to be angry, hurt, upset, deal with
love
she
that.
Said this, yes, I can't believe he did that, and blah, blah, blah. Just let it rip, you know. So then I get to see what's up for me. And there's usually something. But so then, or what I'm worried about, I think I have a PhD in worrying. But so then when I go on the trail, then I would practice more mindfulness. And I'd start just with my senses of what I see, smell, hear, taste. I'd just nibble on the miner's lettuce and the berries and stuff, and feel the air on my skin. So I'd get a lot quieter, a lot more present, but I'd still have that time to settle of hiking into a tree, because there's something about moving that's been a big part of my healing. So by the time I'd reach the tree and be able to sit for a while, a good long while, I was already much more open, receptive, available to perceive. And then from there, it's just entering the mystery, however we all do. And re-owning a lot of our human capacities have been shut down by thousands of years of patriarchy and invalidating and just denying any reality to heightened perception and things that many, many, many people experience. So just knowing that there's more going on here than I know is an opening to see, yeah. To be curious. And some of it's so subtle. Like one thing that has occurred to me lately is, oh, I just think different things when I'm out in the woods. And it's taken me years to realize that because it's so subtle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. Sometimes when I'm out on the ocean, because my favorite place to be is about 3 kilometers offshore, where, you know, you're a long way out and you feel very, very tiny. And yeah, I just have this, I have an experience then, which I don't realize at the time, like you say, it's like afterwards I realize, where I realize that I wasn't actually thinking. I'm just in it. I'm just there with the water and the sky and the vastness. And those, I think those are moments where something unravels in me, you know, where maybe whatever tightness I'm holding or whatever I'm worrying about, it just kind of leaves for a while and you just get to be there. And there's something about it leaving even for only a few minutes, I think, that then teaches you that it can leave and you can be in a different space and life can be different. And yeah. So did you have times where you would go out there hoping for a lovely experience and it didn't live up to expectations?
Yeah, there were times when I couldn't, for whatever reason, I couldn't get out of myself or out of my head, and the places were just as beautiful and I just wasn't there as much. And that also lets me know that these times, like you put it so beautifully, Pollyanna, I think that is where the healing lies, is when we're in one of those states where we let go a little bit, then our bodies have a lot of ability to heal, to right things, to find balance, to make us more comfortable. But no, I couldn't always go there. And then I'd be a little disappointed. But the experience of not always being able to even open up to where I've opened up has made me see that it's on a continuum. And I know now that there's possibilities of opening up and experiencing the bliss of this amazing biosphere that is just so astounding that I haven't even touched yet.
Yeah.
And who knows? So it seems limitless.
And actually, so how long did it take? Like how much time passed of going and visiting the forest and being with the trees until you felt well?
It started right away that I would get better. I'd just sleep a little bit more. I'd have more good nights where I could fall. When I was really ill, I was living on 0 to 2 hours a lot of nights, and the good ones were 4 to 5. The tranquilizers would give me 5, and then I'd never nap. So I was really tired. I was running on fumes. Every once in a while, I'd get a real night of sleep, and I'd feel like I was reborn. So it started immediately. I would just sleep a little better. It'd maybe go up by an hour or something, and I'd feel a little less wretched. But it calmed me down. There was an immediate effect on. I think I'm not a scientist, so I don't know. But I think there's an electromagnetic relationship that happens. Like there, something was really happening to my nervous system in there.
Yeah, and it so, makes. I do wonder about trees, because whenever I've been really miserable and or really wound up or something, and I've remembered to go and sit with my back against a tree, there is something that happens in my nervous system. Something is unwinding and calming down. And I know human beings can co-regulate one another's nervous systems, and I wonder if you can co-regulate with trees, like maybe that is actually a thing.
I suspect it is. I mean, scientists are talking about neural entrainment. Like, we're probably doing it right now. We're having this conversation, and the more into it we get, the more we're kind of syncing up our heartbeat and our breath and our nervous systems. So my experience is that does happen in nature in all kinds of different ways for us too. And I mean, there was a point I was so sick that if I hadn't had the responsibility of raising kids, I wouldn't have wanted to be here. It wasn't a high enough quality life, you know, but I couldn't do anything about it because that would have been so horrible to do something like that to your children. So, and that was only at the worst of it. I wasn't there for that long. But I just kind of felt like I wished I could jump out of my skin. Well, being in the second skin of a beautiful place in nature was like jumping out of my skin. I sort of got that thing that I was wanting when I was so sick. And I just keep getting healthier and healthier now. I did notice when I spiraled into illness, you take a blow somehow. For me, it was the colicky baby and my self-esteem. And then it gets more and more tangled up. You spiral down worse and worse. My sleep left, then my muscles left, then my digestion left. You know, pretty soon I was just a mess. And then I was catching every cold that came down the pike. I didn't even have to be in the same neighborhood to catch it, you know. If it existed, I'd get it. And but so health is the same, only it's the reverse process. One system gets a little better, then another one gets a little better, and then pretty soon another one is, and I'm still doing that. So my well-being is continuing to improve.
Wow.
Which feels great.
Yeah. And so what is your relationship with the forest now?
I still go. I'm passionately going as often as I can. I guess if I had to say one word, mysterious, still. And it's never the same, and I never know what's going to happen, because it's like having a lover when it's the state of the other, in this case, the forest and the trees, and the whole cosmic conditions of the all of that is arising in that moment. It's what I bring, what state I'm in. So there's a huge unpredictability in the exploration into the mystery.
But yeah.
I'm loving it.
Mysterious. I like that.
Yeah, right.
And so do you talk about everything that we've been talking about today in your book?
Some of it, yeah, I touch on it. You know, this book poured out of me really fast, which isn't how I usually write. I've written a number of children's books, and they all take years. But I think what really happened is this book has been being written over 16 years. But I realized partly why the book poured through so fast is, well, when I've been living the story. So it was in me. But it's different. It's a little bit more for everybody and not just for me. And this one is a little bit more, I mean, it has a chapter called Soil and one called Gravity and one called Graves. And, you know, and it gets pretty fanciful because there's a really wonderful book, Your Brain on Art. And I was kind of making some parallels with Your Brain on Nature. Because we do get our creativity stimulated when we're in the fractal, curvy, vibrant environments outside.
Yeah, that's so true. I've been taking questions from work to the ocean. So I'll have a big question like how can we bring the people who will love Sarah, who I work with, her work, how do we bring them in? And then I'll go out and I'll take that question with me to the ocean and I'll paddle on the ocean. And I'm not thinking about it while I'm on the ocean. And then I come back and the next day or whenever I sit down to do my work and something will happen or I'll have an idea. And I know it comes from bringing that question, bringing the question to the ocean, to the vastness, to my sense of connectedness to everything. And of course we are, even if you're completely scientific, we are connected to everything because we're all atoms and molecules and ions and whatever else there is, viruses and bacteria we're made of. So we are a part of everything that is. And it makes sense to me that the information in everything that is, if you're in an open state, would be able to flow through human beings, with human beings, you know, that it's all available to us if we will only kind of get out of our own way.
Yeah, recently I've been intrigued because some physicists are saying we don't have free will because they have proven that the impulse to do something happens before the mind, the brain, has made the decision to do it. But the answer to that is non-localized consciousness. You know, we have free will, but it's on a whole different level.
Yeah.
And it's our response that includes intuition, instinct, state of being, blah, blah, blah. And so anyway, and also I wanted to say in Osprey Oriole Lake's book, The Stories in Our Bones, what really struck me in that book was she talks about how in most cultures, including the Western ones that we've evolved from, people made decisions under a council tree outside. And when we had the takeover of those earth-based traditions, those decisions were all moved inside. And I do think it makes a difference because those subtle energies permeate us more when we're outside in them.
Yeah.
Know? Yes, you could be inside and get a lot of houseplants and open your windows, and for people that can't get outside, there's other ways. It's still possible to connect. So I don't want to deny that because it's hard. With what's happened to the world now, it's getting harder and harder to find unspoiled places to be.
Yeah. I guess it is very sad, and I really hope that the entire world makes a massive effort to protect and care for the intact places that we still have. But I also think about
to grow them.
Because yeah.
Okay, this is what I get at the tree all the time. You ask what's happening now at the trees. Okay. I'm going to preface this. This could be fantasy, but it's so exciting. When I'm sitting with the trees, I often get this thought that seems to come from the larger than me, and I think it's the elementals and the tree spirits. I get this sense that they're just waiting for us to listen and pay attention. And then nature knows how to do this, restoration and healing. And when we cooperate and allow nature to be our guide, it's going to be beyond our wildest imaginations how much healing can happen. Just like you. I mean, and just like me. We didn't think that we would get better. I mean, when you're in the pits of those kinds of illnesses, you don't think you're ever going to get better. I didn't. I thought
No, I didn't that either. I thought my life was over, basically. Well, yeah.
Yeah. So.
That's why I wrote my book was because I needed that story. The person that I was in that situation of being bedridden needed the story that actually I've now written. And so I know that we need those things and we need each other as much as we need nature to share these stories, which is why I wanted to talk to you as well, so that we can what is it that Charles Eisenstein says about creating the more beautiful world we know is possible? Yeah.
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 Definitely. And your story totally inspired me, Pollyanna. I had no idea because you have such a cheerful spirit. Your nature is so friendly and sort of you have that bubbliness to you. I had no idea that you were coping with all that? And I was kind of odd how honest you were too, I have to say. Brave.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's interesting. A lot of people have said that to me, and what it tells me is that, as in terms of they didn't know that I was managing all of this, including my own children. And so what that tells me is that you never know what a person is dealing with. You know, when you meet somebody, when you talk to somebody, when you're interacting with someone, even on a fairly regular basis, you never know what they're carrying and, you know, what their story has been and what's inside them and what they're managing in this moment. And so my real hope is from the book and from these very generous people like you who've agreed to speak to me about your stories is that we can also generate a whole lot more compassion. That if you're speaking to a person or you're looking at a person on social media or you're, you know, in the shop with the person behind the counter, there's no way of knowing what their world is like and what they're dealing with and what they've dealt with in the past. And so it would be so lovely if we all gave everyone the benefit of the doubt and assumed that they're doing their best with whatever they've got and that we could just be a whole lot more compassionate. And I feel like that level of compassion, if we can give that to one another, it naturally extends out to then everything else, the animals, the insects, the trees, the rivers, the ocean, the whales. Yeah.
Wow. I feel like crying. That was so beautiful. Oh. Yeah. That is just so sweet. And speaking of the animals, my daughter decided to keep bees, and where she's keeping them is my backyard. So we just got bees yesterday. It was such a trip. I keep going out there and looking, are you still here? They're still there.
That's exciting. That's very exciting. Yeah. So
compassion.
Yeah. And I'm conscious of the time. So I would love to ask you one more question, which is, if there are people listening to this who are in the pits right now or who are at the beginning of a healing journey, what's the one thing that you feel like was the biggest learning for you or the biggest insight that you had on your healing journey?
I'd say trust yourself, trust your inner knowing. There's a part of each of us that knows if you need a glass of water or if you need a massage or a biofeedback treatment or if you need medicine or conventional medicine. And it's okay to go to experts, but don't give that power away. And in your book, you talk about how doctors gave you the prognosis of you're just going to get worse. That's what they told me. You just have to live with this. You're never going to be able to turn your neck off, you know? And no, listen inward, because our bodies are miraculous. It's a miracle we're here at all. A lot of my illness, for me, it was also psycho-spiritual, emotional. It's all tied together. So the healing happened on every level. And so there is an intelligence in each of us that we can find and we can trust. And that requires some listening, really listening to ourselves. And listening when we're feeling mad or hurt or not jumping right into the blaming ourselves for not being good enough and to having the reaction and all that, just allowing ourselves to be exactly where we are and listening to that, because there's wisdom. And our bodies, what we get consciously, I think our bodies pick up trillions of bits of information for every little thing that we consciously are aware of. So trusting our bodies more. What I would say.
That's beautiful. Thank you. And if anybody would love to read your forest bathing book, where can they find it?
Okay, it's not here yet. It's coming out with Inner Traditions Bear and Company soon. I'm not sure when soon is. It might be next fall or next spring. So it could be, you know, it's in there. And I'll post it on my Facebook, and I have a website, and there's places you can find it. But it's not here yet.
Okay. Well, I'm very excited to read it. I'm looking forward to that very much. And I will put the link to your website in the show notes for anybody who wants to go check out your work. And thank you so much, Ellen. I feel really privileged to have been having this window into your story, and also for the that's the amazing description of being in the redwoods. I can still feel it.
Yeah, I can feel the birds on the water from reading your book. So, this is fun, Pollyanna. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Thrive, Conversations from the Fertile Edges with me, Pollyanna Darling, and my delightful guest, author Ellen D. Davidson. You can find Ellen's books at ellendavidson.com. That's ellendeedavidson.com. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you'd leave a rating and share it with your networks. And I will see you next time at the Fertile Edges.